On this episode of Journeys of Peace, I'm Jackson Eide, and I'm joined today by Sean Parker.
Hi, Jackson.
Hi. So today we are going to ask you some questions and see what you're all about.
Ooh, interesting.
All right. Okay, first question. What is a favorite story from your childhood?
I thought about this for a long time because I have to think about, you know, childhood. What is that age?
Right, right.
You know, what is that breath of time? Is it until I'm 18? Because if it's that, then I have a very different story as like a high school student versus, you know,
right,
when I was a little guy. I would probably say, you know, if I'm thinking more of the elementary school life, you know, I'm not from here in the Twin Cities or even Minnesota. I grew up kind of right between Seattle, Washington, and Vancouver, British Columbia. So I was still in the States. You know, Vancouver is pretty much right on the border of the southwestern border of Canada and the northwestern border of, you know, the United States, which is Washington. And my grandparents owned a dairy farm about a half an hour south of the border. And I always loved spending time there because I got a sense of freedom to go, you know, help out and work on the dairy farm and go get lost and move, move the water setup, you know.
Right.
So we can water the fields, and then they cut them, and then we use that to feed the cows. And, you know, you had to go, like, pull water from a pump out of the creek, so it was always fun to go jump in there and get wet in the summer, you know. But one particular story from that time was we were playing tag. And we were playing tag in what's called the new barn because it is the one that was built before the old barn.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really fancy name they came up with. But there is there's an area of the new barn where it's kind of a holding pen for some of the cows as we move them around for either headed out to eat or coming in to milk. And this pen had not been shoveled in some time. So the cow manure in that pen was easily knee high.
Right.
Right. Like it was considerable. And so we would play tag around this pen. Right. Because around, you know, first of all, there was like two walls that were the outside of the barn. Right. But then there were two walls that were essentially gates and fencing. And so if you had good balance, you could take those two. You could take those two ways and not get touched.
Right.
But guess what happens if you fall off on those two walls? You go straight into that giant pile of manure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a long, you don't get to take one step and you're out of it. It's, you got to get out. And so there was one time we were playing and two of my cousins lived on the farm with my grandparents. Well, not with them, but their father had built a house on the farm and worked the farm with his father, my grandpa. And they were always there, Chris and Jason. And Jason was my younger cousin, and he was trapped on the wall, and he couldn't go along because my younger brother Adam was right next to him, and Adam wouldn't let him go, you know. And so he jumped. He just jumped straight into the manure. So he wasn't it, right? It was bold. We couldn't believe he did it, right? Because that's the whole thing was like, one, don't get touched. Two, avoid the cow poo, right?
Uh-huh.
And he jumped straight in. And we were all cracking up. And he thought it was brilliant until he took a step.
Yep.
And he took a big step. And his boot went nowhere, and his foot went straight out, and he took his next step in his exposed sock right into that big pile. Horrible. Right, it sounds gross, but boy, man, we laughed about that for so long. Yeah, so that is a pretty funny one from childhood. But there are so many stories like that on the farm.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. All right, question number two: if you could talk to a younger version of yourself, what would you say?
Actually, this is an easy one.
Okay.
And I've actually thought this for many years.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, and that's just shut up and listen more. Yeah. Would be worry less, ask more questions.
Yeah.
I think those are the two big things, is do more listening. And instead of letting any worry or things about that kind of quietly bother me, and ask questions. I think when I was younger, I felt a sense of worry about upsetting my elders a lot of the time, you know. I don't want to say that things were strict in my house. But in my others, on the farm, there was, you know, some general respect that was commanded for safety, if anything, right? But the other side of my family, things were a little odd. My grandpa, I think, was a very depressed man who came back from World War II. And, you know, like a lot of men at that time, really struggled with alcoholism. And so there were some weird moments in my childhood where it was, you better be quiet or bad things are going to happen.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think that permeated into the other parts of my life where I just kind of got used to not talking about my feelings with people. And that included my parents, unfortunately, I think.
Yep.
So I think I would tell my younger self to trust my gut and be okay with asking about your worries, but listen more too. Yeah.
Are there any big moments, or maybe not big, but moments that you can pick out that would have helped you a lot and you think that would have changed things for you?
Well, I think when I really started to, quote, listen and really do a better job of listening, I think it was when I went back to college because I wanted to.
Okay.
So I finished high school, you know, we talked about this, I think, once before, where my senior year in high school, I had like 3 classes.
Right.
Because I'd finished everything else. So I'd go in the morning and I'd have like 2 classes, and then I'd have the early lunch. And then I would do 1 or 2 TAs. And like one was the basketball coach, and the other one was, I forget, I think he was a Spanish and U.S. history kind of a guy. And so I would just often just not show up. You know, we would go cliff jumping or, you know, mountain biking and stuff, and then come back for soccer practice. You know, but use that afternoon for great times. But I also really started to, during that time, I also started to get frustrated with institutional thinking. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean in a way where it's like damn the man, but where I really started to have my own questions about a lot of things, and started asking those questions and started listening and actually, you know, run into some frustration actually with my faith and how things look like that for me, especially in high school. And I knew in my heart that it wasn't any question that I had about a sense of connectivity to the universe or a higher power or being. And if, you know, but I did have some questions about how things, you know, looked in terms of many religions, including how we looked at Christianity and Lutheranism specifically.
Right.
and so I did a lot of reading, and I did a lot of asking questions about philosophy and religion when I went back into school, because I considered that to be a really important thing. That connectivity in some way and that concept of faith and how there seems to be that interconnectivity globally, but nobody can really put their finger down on like what it is, right? And that could be that faith thing, right? That belief and want to accept and believe that that thing is there in some way. And in those questions, in that time, in that faith, I think I also learned to listen to my heart, how we call it.
Yeah.
And I actually like to say my gut more. I think that concept is something that has paid off in following many times in my life. Like all of the big moments, I think, in my life as I, you know, once I finished high school and found all these things that I knew I didn't want to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've worked a lot of jobs. It's really funny. Like my wife will, you know, Jennifer, we'll be hanging out and I'll talk about, still today, like I'll bring up a job and she's like, you have not even told me about that job. How's that a thing? Right. But gosh dang it, I get off topic so easy that way right now. But I would kind of listen to my heart and literally ask the universe or God or kind of pray just one-on-one saying, hey, I really need some direction this way. I really need you to tell me which way I should go with this because I am really on the fence and not sure. I feel like those moments are very genuine for me when I have them and I really ask. And I've had some amazing experiences in my life by doing that. You know, when I say listening and paying attention, it's not just to people, right? It's right. to situations. It's to things that happen around you. And I think a lot of people find that stuff to be just the chaos of the universe and circumstantial. But I don't always necessarily think that's the thing. But that's just me.
Yeah. I think it's a very powerful thing to be able to observe and
yeah.
That's a very strong skill.
And when we talk about, you know, when I talk about listening, I should preface that I am always thinking about, you know, when I say listening, that's a multi-sensory thing. Yeah. It's not just having those ears on. As a teacher and a teacher of music, specifically voice, something that we always tell our students is that people always listen with their eyes. Right?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's fun stuff to think about.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. All right. Question number three. How has your life been different than you imagined?
Well, a lot different. I think that as a young person, I had a tough time kind of imagining like what I was going to be or what I wanted to do a lot of the time. Even when I finished high school, I was unsure. Like the things that I liked to do, I don't know if I felt self-confident about or where I would go with them. You know, I'm a musician and a teacher. Yeah. And when I finished high school, I had a really great choir director who had me do an audition, create an audition tape to send to Berkeley in Boston.
Oh, wow, okay.
Yeah, and I ended up getting a scholarship for tens of thousands of dollars. But no one in my family had gone to college. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my grandparents, you know, one side my grandparents were dairy farmers, yeah. and the other side, my grandpa drove a beer truck. His wife couldn't drive a car. Yeah. So the blue collar, the extra blue collar was just kind of my family's life, and so my parents were really focused on me trying to find a job that paid a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so they were always happy when I would say, you know, when I had concepts or ideas of wanting to be a lawyer or something mm-hmm. like that, right? Because, of course, that pays well.
Yeah.
But as I grew older, I started looking at the concept of different ways in helping community. And, you know, of course, teaching was one of those. And my mom was not happy, like, when I told her that. And she was like, teachers don't make any money. And I'm, you know. But they were worried about that because I was ignorant to it when I was younger. Like, I didn't realize that people really cared about the fact that my high tops were just Nikes and not Nike Airs.
Yeah.
Right? Or that, like, was another one. That I used to have to wear the, like, Velcro vinyl shoes that were, like, gray. It was horrible. Like, you could tell they were, like, fake. There was a store called Kinney. Yeah. I don't know if you know that store. K-I-N-N-E-Y. Kinney's. And, yeah, you have to go and get, like, the Sears Roebuck bad-looking shoes. Yeah? No fun. But, so I didn't have a great vision of, like, what I wanted to do. My teacher, like I said, the choir teacher, he saw that I could go to college and do that thing, but I had no idea what that was. How am I going to go to Boston?
Yeah.
Where is Boston? Like, I know what Boston is, and I know what Massachusetts is, but I'd never been outside of Washington State,
yeah.
you know, at that point, probably. But through my journeys, I ended up going down to Mexico twice to help rebuild an orphanage that was managing flooding issues. I ended up finding my path into college, and I went to community college, and then I moved on to Washington State University, and then there I met my wife, not married yet, But I had already made some plans before I met her, and I went and lived in Japan for a year.
Oh, cool.
Teaching English there. I loved that experience and ended up coming back, and I went to grad school at Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo, and a whole lot of stuff happened while I was there. I went to New York and performed in many great places, including Carnegie Hall, include the jazz at the Lincoln Center. A lot of people call it the house that Wynton built. Wynton Marsalis is a very prolific figure in jazz and really a living legend, kind of leading the charge and maintaining the popularity and culture that is jazz. You know, it's America's first music. But here I start to digress again. There's no way that me from Mount Vernon, Washington, envisioned myself being a graduate assistant for a music program that is one of the top three in the nation in terms of the music that I wanted to do.
Right.
Right. That was really overwhelming. And I didn't know how to really get through that. I didn't have a map. I didn't have someone to hand me advice from home. Like, Dad, what do I do? I don't know, just do the right thing. Like, be nice. Do the things you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. He's a truck driver. He's like, I don't know how to tell you how to, you know, right?
Yeah,
a lot of options. Yeah, he drove truck, and he's very good at what he does. And, worked really hard his whole life and my life. But no help. So, you know, I've been to four continents, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, I taught for many years, and I didn't expect a school that I was working at to just shut down out of nowhere. So that was unexpected.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah. And so I've been kind of navigating things since then, and there's been a whole lot of unexpected going on since then, too. There was one time I had five jobs within the last 6 years, all happened at the same time. You know, tiny little things to piece together. That was a good set of money, but boy, man, we were talking about profiles. Mm-hmm. Try managing that many email addresses. Jeez. Yeah, I was teaching at three different higher ed institutions, and then I was teaching at a high school. Mm-hmm. And then I had, like, some side stuff that I was doing, including singing in the choir, playing bass, you know. But now I've quit all that. I'm working at one job and apparently trying to make a nonprofit happen.
Apparently.
That is not awesome. How I saw things going when I was a kid. No. Yeah.
Do you think that, like your answer to the previous question, do you think that your ability to listen and pay attention more, do you think that kind of helped you develop through the challenges that you faced kind of growing up and trying to...
Yeah, you know, I had a lot of challenges growing up that I didn't even know about until later in life from ignorance, right? Like the literal term of just not knowing. My son is 12, and my wife and I, while he was younger, definitely noticed some differences in things, and he is pretty high on the list for ADHD and anxiety and those kind of things, and so at about age 45, I'm discovering that the apple does not fall far from the tree, and I'm getting my own adult diagnosis of that kind of thing, and I'm apparently pretty high up on that too, in terms of, you know, they don't tell you like how quote bad it is, because it's not a good bad thing, it's just, you know, how turned up is the dial perhaps for the sake of a better thing. But so there are a lot of struggles that I'm looking at in reflection now that were ones that were really about my wiring and not about like who I wanted to be or what I thought was right or wrong, and that's a different idea that I'm really kind of discovering, or I should say, kind of meditating upon, and, you know, and thinking about that history, like why did a lot of the relationships go the way they did? When I think about, you know, my behavior because of that ignorance and how I have tendencies to be, and so. I don't know if I'm answering a question ahead of time here, but I know one of the questions is like, how have things challenged my life in some way.
Yeah, and we can move on to that.
No, but I think the question that you're asking helps to segue into that. Because I had all sorts of challenges of which I was unaware of, right? I was ignorant to. But life doesn't stop, right? You still got to grind and figure out your way through that. And I spent a lot of time in that later high school, actually graduated through high school a couple of years past, just deciding to really pay attention and listen. And that put me on the journey that I ended up now, really going into school and choosing a direction. But I think, Abel Gage, if you ever hear this out there in Skagit Valley College, if you're still teaching there, thank you for passing me in statistics and probability my time at Skagit Valley College Community College, because I took three courses with Abel Gage. Really, really awesome guy. Played great guitar, had a really cool band, way ahead of its time. Just really great stuff, yeah. But he was more into math, so they didn't really make it big. He didn't commit, right? But he was a really quiet guy, and he was a really great teacher. He did a really great job of breaking things down and explaining it to you, yeah? And so I went and I took some algebra courses with him, and I did a pre-calc course, and I killed him. A's, yeah? Then I had to take this is the last math that I had to take to go on to get what is called an AAUCT degree, an associate's, right? And a university transfer degree, essentially. So this was my golden ticket to any state school that I wanted. Right. They couldn't reject me. Yeah. That was my plan because I didn't know how else to do it, right? And so this statistics and probability class, I'm like, oh, cool, Abel's teaching it. Right on, you know. It's not math. Mm-hmm. I was like, this isn't math, Abel. I was like, if you give me a problem to solve, I'll do it. You want me to, like, put some numbers into a calculator and press a couple buttons and a whole new thing shows up. And this concept of order of operations and this, and I'll use the term executive functioning, right, and figuring out your way through these probability issues did not jibe with my mind,
right,
and with my brain. Yeah. Like spatial concepts like geometry, oh yeah, I will tell you the volume of things that are irregular shaped, you know, but this thing was so frustrating to me because of this calculator thing, whereas like that's doing the math, and it would always be like, well, I'm showing you how it works, and I was like, yeah, but I want to, you know,
right.
Well, there's no time for that, and I was like, well, that's dumb, right? That was my, you know, I didn't say that, but
yeah,
that is, of course, kind of my attitude with it, but that wasn't me kind of quitting. I would go see him after class like all the time. I got a D+ in that class, and it's the worst grade that I got of all my college grades. Yeah, well, probably my high school grades too. Now that I think about it, and I bet I didn't even pass. And now that I've thought about it, because I think he passed me because he knew, like, this has nothing to do with this person's desire to move on or to even do the work.
Right.
But I couldn't take a test. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I got D. I couldn't believe it. I got D+. So I think the challenges in my life I'm discovering now are kind of the neurodiversity things that I had to grow up with in ignorance. Whereas thankfully that my kid's not going to have to do that. It's really exciting to watch his awareness of how he is shape in some really great ways how he interacts in culture.
Yeah.
It's great. With
the internet and everything, it's
a
lot more accessible. You can
learn more. Absolutely.
That's a really great thing.
Yeah.
Touching on those challenges again.
Yeah.
And how you were thinking about questioning, and you talked about your faith a bit.
Yeah.
And about how you, listening.
Yeah.
How do you think that those challenges impacted your faith and
they impacted it big time.
Yeah.
Like something I haven't talked to you about yet is I also kind of grew up in church. Mm-hmm. And my parents weren't necessarily highly religious. My grandfather, I didn't know until he was dying, was like really religious. But he didn't really go to church. He prayed to God every night. He talked to God and talked to him about his day and prayed for the ones he loved and everything every night when he went to bed. I never knew this his whole life. My dad didn't tell me about it until he had passed. So religion was something very private to my grandparents. And my parents, we jumped around to a lot of different churches. As a kid, I think the first church I remember was a Baptist church. Way up north near the border of Canada. But we eventually ended up mostly Lutheran, and we did a non-denominational church that was like a covenant thing, and all great churches, and you know, so we weren't really denominational specific. No Catholic. No. That's too highbrow for us. Too highbrow for the farm people.
Yeah.
In my town, there were, you know, a lot of Methodists and Presbyterians, and they were all pals, right? So our youth group would change to different churches depending on the month and whatnot. And I was in youth group, like, kind of funny, religiously, for many years through middle school and high school. And that involved leadership in those. I play guitar for songs, and I would, you know, and me and some other of the people who were involved in the youth group would kind of plan stuff, right, for our meetings. And these meetings were like every Wednesday at 7, or, you know. And so we would have a meeting on Mondays about getting ready for it, and then on Wednesdays we would have the thing, you know. It was really great. I love my experience going through all of that youth group stuff. But as I went through high school and I got to experience and understand a lot of different things in life, particularly my experiences in going down to Mexico and kind mm-hmm. of seeing how things operate differently in places that were not so abundant as the Skagit Valley in the Pacific Northwest of the country. I was privileged enough at a younger age to go down and help people who were in need, but also help people who were like really in need. It was interesting to go, like they were saying, we got to go by the dump. So we're going to go by the dump. Everybody just, you know, don't freak out, whatever. But we end up getting there, and it's a giant valley, right? A valley, you know, canyon, if you will, small canyon. It's a pretty big space, yeah? It was clearly a former river valley creek or something that had been carved out. It was down in Mexico, so it's dry, you know, and so flash floods happen frequently and carve things out like that. And it was just full of trash as far as you could see, yeah? And then I realized as I looked down there, there's like so many people out there digging through the trash looking for stuff. And then I found out that those people were actually living in these houses made out of pallet boards that were just on the edge of the garbage, of the dump. And then adjacent to that area where they were all living was this just immensely long graveyard of relatively unmarked graves and kids' graves and all of this stuff, all in the same little area of like forgottenness, right? Is what it felt like to me as a kid, and so seeing those things and getting frustrated in general with how society was operating, not only in our own country but globally, and kind of being awakened to the things that are outside of my little Skagit Valley,
right.
I started to have a lot of questions and get frustrated about things, and I think that I started to move away from institutionalism, right? Like churches started to bug me because I would go and watch people put their smiley faces on and then not say hi to my mom at the grocery store.
Right.
Right? Stuff like that. And as a teenager already kind of frustrated, that stuff just made me so mad. And and that institutionalism, or that quote, I would say fundamentalism, where I'll go to Sunday and put that face on for you, but not really live that life away from church, really, really bugged me. Yeah. I'm in my wiring as a human, I have a strong sense of kind of, you know, justice, or wanting that kind of equity and equality for people, and that kind of stuff really bothered me. And so I started asking a bunch of questions as I went through confirmation, and I started, you know, becoming an older student through church. And my pastor was clearly not digging it so much anymore. And one day he said to me, he said, you know, it actually says in the Bible that God says that we shouldn't question everything. That, you know, that some things we should just accept how they are. Right. Nope. Nope. Sorry. Not with this guy.
Yeah.
That was not okay. So from that point on, I really started having a different outlook on church in terms of institutions. And my relationship with God really started to become something different.
Right.
And it still is. I am only here because, or at this church, right? Because I think that the majority of the people are of a mind and lead a life that is consistent with what is preached here, mm-hmm. you know, and what is taught.
Yeah.
And so I really dig that. Yeah. I don't think that's the norm.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. We have a very interesting church here.
Yeah.
It's very special.
Yeah, so my faith was shaken a lot through, or questioned, came into question. But I've had enough experiences in my life to know. I think one of my favorite things is you know, people talk about, you know, you're going to go to hell or all this stuff. Be scared. And I don't think that that's how religion is supposed to work. But it does so often, mm-hmm. yeah? And I think that God, you know, people talk about the concepts of like, well, what about like monks of other church, of other religions, but they didn't accept Jesus, right? So they're going to go to hell, right? And it's like, those are the things that I'm not going to worry about.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that you're not supposed to worry about. And quite literally, that's what it says in the Bible, right? And so there's a horrible movie that I love to use a quote of in terms of my faith. And it's from an Irish Catholic pastor in this Arnold Schwarzenegger movie called The End of Days.
Okay.
It's horrible. It's so bad it's good, right?
Right.
Gabriel Byrne, tremendous Irish actor, plays the Antichrist. He somehow escapes and he's coming and it's bad times, mm-hmm. right? And Arnold figures out and he's got to save everybody. Well, he's having this talk with this Irish Catholic priest, and the priest says, I've been doing this for 40-some years or whatever, he says. And all that time, there's two things I know. One, there is a God. And two, it isn't me. And I think that's about where I still stand with this thing. Yeah.
How do you want to be remembered? And this doesn't have to be like when you die. How, you know, if you see people, how do you want them to...
I think I want people to think of me as genuine. I want people to think of me as someone who actually did, like I said, who walked his talk, right? I'm very much a person who believes that we all do better when we all do better. Like, I think that society exists because it's hard to stay alive by yourself.
Yeah.
Quite literally.
Yeah.
And I think we can talk about all of the rhetoric around that, around like what a society is. But if we fundamentally go down to it, I pretty much feel like that's it, right? Like the only reason there are people together is they are either family members, right? Or they're like, we're not going to make it unless we chip in together to do this thing. Yeah. Right? And so if we are making actions and we are doing decisions as a culture and as a society that run counter to that concept, right? And that's the bad stuff. So I want to be remembered as a person who fought that, who championed against that. Yeah. My wife wants me to go into politics, and I think it's a horrible idea.
I think you'd be great in politics. Yeah, I would love to see you debating. Oh, that would be great. So, some strong opinions, strong words that would be said. All right.
I've never been accused of that, Jackson, ever. Yeah?
No?
That's heavy sarcasm.
Okay, last question. What is one change you would like to see in the world?
Yeah, I think that segues into that.
Yeah.
Right? I think if we all spent our time worrying about someone else or worrying about what someone else needs, like, we would all be taken care of.
Yeah.
And that sounds silly, or that sounds impossible, or that sounds altruistic. Yeah, it does. You're not wrong. 100%. But why wouldn't you go for that?
Right.
Why are we settling? And we quite literally are settling a lot. Yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
Like, so I think the thing that I really want to change more than anything is this idea that religions and economic policies and political structures or any of that stuff matters. If we aren't trying to build a community.
All right. Well, thank you for your time.
Yeah,
this was really great. Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course.
I hope this is a successful endeavor.
I hope it is too.
All right.
All right. This has been Journeys of Peace. Signing off.